Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
This is All Sides with Amy Jurevich, and this is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. This year's winner of RuPaul's Drag Race is one of Ohio's own. Anya Nerve, a drag performer native to Cleveland and Canton, participated and won the 17th season of the Emmy Award-winning show RuPaul's Drag Race. And she's here with us today. Welcome to All Sides, Anya.
Hey, so good to be here. Thank you, guys.
So right off the bat, how does it feel to be the queen and win RuPaul's Drag Race?
It feels so correct. It feels very, very correct for me. I mean, honestly, before doing Drag Race, getting on the show, my goal when starting to do drag was to get on Drag Race. So, like, honestly, it's a full circle moment. I worked really, really, really hard to get here. Everything that I've done before Drag Race has prepared me for this moment. So I can be nothing but proud.
Have you come down off of the high of it yet? Or does it still feel like just yesterday that you won?
I mean, I don't even know if it sank in, you know, like ever since winning, it's been like, go, 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 next city, next city, next bar, next performance. This is actually the first time I've had a little bit of a break. So it's still sinking in. I go through moments where I'm just like, wow, I actually got on the show and won. It's really unreal. I know it sounds like I'm just on some crazy high, but I just can't. I honestly can't believe it.
Now, how did you end up on RuPaul's Drag Race? What was the application process like?
It was a pretty lengthy process before. It's a written portion and a video portion. They ask you about 16 to 20 different questions about your life, your personal life, your drag life, and how you started doing drag, how you got your name and stuff along those lines. And then once you submit that, you submit basically the written portion in video form. So you do you answer the same questions, except it's like on video. And after that, cross your fingers and you might get on the show. But that's pretty much the process.
Did you apply more than once, or did you get in on your first try?
Yes, honey. I only applied one time.
you were destined to be a winner then. There you go. So you grew up in Canton. You live in Cleveland. How does it feel to represent Cleveland and Ohio on this national stage?
It feels really good. You know, like Cleveland and Canton specifically, they're not really like big cities. And, you know, while Drag Race has had some representation from Ohio and Cleveland, it just feels really good because, you know, Cleveland is an underdog city and it's a big deal. You know, like we had LeBron and we had other like big things go on in the city. But I feel like it's the type of city that needs reminded that it's a cool place. So me winning Drag Race is like a cool reminder to everyone that like, yeah, we have cool people and talented people in this hometown. So,
yep, LeBron James and Anya Nerve. What more does Cleveland need, right?
Nothing. They don't need nothing else.
Were you nervous to be on the show? Like when you were filming it, or did you feel like nervous at all?
I was extremely nervous. You know, like being from Cleveland, I knew that like a lot of the entertainers weren't going to know of me. You know, I knew of some of the girls before getting on the show and they have like a big following. So I did feel like I was going to be underestimated. And along with the competition, I knew that I was going to have to work at, you know, becoming friends with the other competitors. And it was nerve wracking. So yes, I very much was nervous and it took me a while to feel like I got my footing on the show.
There are so many talented performers on the show. Did you feel like, I mean, I know you were competing, but did you become friends? Did you learn from each other too?
Yes, absolutely. I feel like I'm friends with every single person that I competed with in different ways, of course. But yeah, they're my sisters forever.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. We're talking with Cleveland native Anya Nerve, the winner of the 17th season of RuPaul's Drag Race. So how long have you done drag? When did you start?
It'll be 4 years this month, actually. I was a COVID baby. So I was born during COVID around like 2021. Yeah, 2021 was when I started doing drag.
Now, is that young? Like the people you were competing with on RuPaul's Drag Race, had they been doing it for more years than that? Or is like, you know, 3 or 4 years typical?
That's definitely young. There are queens who've been doing it on the show specifically like 8 to 13 years. I would think that 4 years or anything under that is still considered like a baby queen. Anything over 5, I consider like a seasoned queen, but like I would consider myself a baby queen for like at least one more year.
A baby queen with a big win in your belt there. So
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And you were named Cleveland's best drag performer in 2023. Is Cleveland a great city for drag?
I feel like it is a great city for drag. I feel like specifically in Cleveland, there's a lot of different types of entertainers. Believe it or not, I feel like burlesque is a little more popular than drag in Cleveland. And there's also a lot of like new drag entertainers coming from like Kent State and colleges over there. And a lot of kings as well. So it's like a mosh posh of like a lot of different entertainers. So I'm very grateful to come from Cleveland because there's so many different types of drag coming here.
Now, you grew up in Canton, and I know you said you didn't start doing drag until about 2021. But growing up, were you a performer? Were you someone who was out there and trying to be on the stage?
Yes, I've actually been doing theater for like well over 10 years now. About like 13 or 14 years. I've done multiple musicals and plays in Northeast Ohio and community theaters around this area.
Now, Ohio is, you know, arguably a conservative state, but Cleveland would be a more progressive city. Do you feel supported, like after your win? Are you hearing from all over Ohio, or are people very happy for you?
Yes, I'm definitely hearing a lot, especially from Cleveland specifically. I've had a few interviews from, you know, Cleveland Magazine, Scene Magazine, and places like that. And I've been getting so much support from the bars in Cleveland as well.
Are you going to take yourself? I know you said you've been traveling around the country a lot since you were the winner. Are you going to travel around the state a little bit more to say that you're the queen and you're from Ohio?
Well, I'll definitely be at Pride in Cleveland and Columbus this year, next month. So I'm very excited for that.
Now, during the show, your father dressed in drag on the show, and you seem surprised and excited by that. What was that experience like for you two to do together?
It was insane. I don't know if you saw that episode, but on the episode, I definitely was expecting my mom to come on the show. So I was already very like emotional because I love my mom. But when RuPaul said, Andre, welcome Anya's dad, Andre, I fell to the floor because I just did not expect my dad to come on the show. He has always been a big supporter of me doing drag, but I didn't think he supported me to the point where he was going to come on the show and dress as a woman with me. So it was so heartwarming. And then watching it back with the world, it was crazy.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that you weren't allowed to talk about the show until it aired, right? So you had to hide the fact from people that you were like, wait till you get to this one episode and you see my dad.
Yeah, I definitely had to wait.
So do you feel like you had a lot of family support even before going on to RuPaul's Drag Race? Is your family supportive of everything?
Oh yeah. They're huge supporters of me and my drag, wholeheartedly.
And what was, your family and friends, what was the reaction to the win? Were they pretty confident as you made it through, more and more episodes that you were going to win?
Yeah, I feel like they were like biting their nails along with the rest of the rest of the world, be it that I couldn't really tell them how well I did on the show. Mm-hmm. It was fun watching them squeal.
So you won $200,000. I'm sure that hasn't even sunk in, but what do you plan? Do you have plans for the prize?
Beyond saving it, I haven't really had time to think about it too much. I don't own a home right now, so that's something that I plan on looking at in my future. And I don't know, I've lived in Ohio my whole life, and I would love to live somewhere that's not in Ohio. I'm honestly just open to all things. We'll see where the wind takes me.
You mentioned LeBron James earlier. You're going to pull a LeBron and leave us for Miami, take your talents to Miami or LA?
No, not yet. You know, Ohio is a wonderful and affordable place to live, so I'll be here for a fat minute.
So I know you said that you started into drag about 4 years ago, so you still consider yourself a baby queen. Do you have any advice out there for someone who maybe is interested in starting drag? I know people always ask you for advice for youth, but let's start with advice for another adult, because obviously if you started just 4 years ago, you're a full-grown adult when you started. Do you have advice on people reaching out there and trying something new like that?
I would say that, like, drag isn't a hobby, it's a career. So I feel like if you are going to do drag, you need to first learn the craft, study the craft, learn the history of drag. And then when you start doing it, it's very expensive. So I wouldn't recommend doing it without another job, because drag is expensive. And then I would say that, you know, you have to put your all into it. Hopefully it would pay off. I feel like a lot of people think that drag is like a hobby, which it is, but I feel like if you really want to be successful in it, you have to treat it like any other job.
And then that other question that you get asked a lot, I've saw you in a couple other interviews getting asked this. Do you have any advice for youth out there, especially maybe youth in Ohio, on just anyone who's queer youth, not even just thinking about doing drag, but just the idea of being different and being yourself?
I think first and foremost is that you have to, like, hang around people and be around people who are who think and do the things that you do. It's important to build community. And I feel like, especially for the artistic queer youth, I think it's important to follow your dreams. A lot of the times we get, like, you know, pushed down by, like, the weight of the world, and especially in the political climate that we're in now. But if you continue to, like, follow the things that you love to do, there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. And I feel like I'm a living proof of that. And I just encourage people to do the same.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Thank you to Canton native and Cleveland resident Anya Nerve, the winner of the 17th season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And this is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
This is All Sides with Amy Jurevich, and this is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. America has many zoos and aquariums across the country where people of all ages can experience the many animals of our planet. All the while, they work towards conservation and wildlife protection. They cannot do this work alone, however. Our guest today works for the Zoological Association of America, an organization dedicated to ensuring zoos and aquariums in America are safe and productive. Joining me now is Kelly George, Executive Director of the Zoological Association of America and an alumnus of The Ohio State University. Welcome to Fascinating Ohio, Kelly.
Thank you for having me. So I first wanted to just start with your degrees that you have from Ohio State. What made you want to pursue zoology?
So my degree is not technically zoology, although I consider myself an anthrozoologist, which is an interdisciplinary exploration of the human and non-human animal relationship. My degrees are all from Ohio State, as you stated. I have a bachelor's in international relations and diplomacy. I have a master's in geography. And then I have a PhD out of the School of Environment and Natural Resources. But I taught in the Department of Animal Sciences for a number of years. So are in a lot of different colleges and in a lot of different perspectives with my tenure at Ohio State, both as a student and as faculty. So what led me to follow that passion, I would say, really starts at a zoo and aquarium. I was inspired very young by visiting multiple zoos and aquariums. My family was always very open to letting me enjoy nature. And sometimes that was nature in my backyard. And sometimes that was seeing animals that I would never have an opportunity to see in my backyard, being that I am from Ohio. And so I was just fascinated by all the amazing creatures that we share this planet with. And that led me to want to dedicate my career to understanding that better, the relationship, the fascination, the conservation. Eventually I got to that point. That's kind of what led me down that path, is really starting with zoos and aquariums, which is where I've ended up as my profession.
Yeah, that's interesting, your variety of degrees, including international relations, because I think that probably does play in with zoos sometimes, whether it be the relationships between different zoos or also getting animals or talking about animals from different places around the world. I'm sure that some of what you studied comes into play.
It absolutely does. And, and working with people across different cultures and with different perspectives as well, I think that degree actually set me up to be the most successful in the sense of just trying to make sure that we can communicate across communities and cultures, and making sure that, we keep in mind what our ultimate goal is, and that in this case is wildlife conservation. So I think it was important.
Now, you work for the Zoological Association of America. So can you tell me about that organization? What does it do for zoos?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are a member-based accrediting organization for zoos and aquariums across the U.S. We do also have one accredited facility in Canada. Our mission is to help, I guess I will say, to help the industry, number one, get their message out about what the zoo and aquarium industry is about, but also to provide professional development for our industry members. That includes our individual members, but also for our accredited facilities, to uphold the highest standards in animal welfare, in animal care, in animal safety, in public safety, including our staff and guests. Our mission really is focused on three main pillars, and that would be to advocate for our animals, to advocate for our members, to educate, to think about how we educate again through professional development, but also externally, our conservation messaging to our guests and visitors. And then finally, obviously, to conserve. And that would be, using our ex situ conservation opportunities to prompt and promote in situ conservation efforts as well. So that's kind of what ZAA does.
Now, does a zoo or aquarium, or both, I guess, do they apply to get your accreditation, and then people from your organization go and tour it and, ask questions?
That's pretty spot on. So there is a very lengthy application process. And then as a part of that process, There is then an inspection. We have at least typically two, depends on the size of the facility, but at least two inspectors that go and do a very thorough inspection to make sure that the facility that is applying is actually upholding our accreditation standards. So we do have, let me back up one second and just say that all zoos and aquariums, in order to exhibit animals, have a USDA license, right? We all have a C license. We're all inspected by the USDA. And that licensing takes place, and that we have annual inspections, but the licensing currently takes place every 3 years through USDA. What ZAA does is we actually have accreditation standards that even go above and beyond the standards that are required for the license through USDA. And so that requires then additional inspections from us, from our organization, to again assure that the applicant is achieving those standards. And then that process is valid for 5 years before they would need to reapply and again be reinspected at that point. So that's the accreditation process.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides, and we're talking with Kelly George, Executive Director of the Zoological Association of America and an alumnus of Ohio State University. Now, you work for the Zoological Association of America, that's ZAA. There's also an organization called AZA, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. Those are two different groups, different accreditations. Can you tell me the main difference between your two organizations?
Yeah, I get asked this quite a bit. So AZA has been around for much longer than ZAA. ZAA actually is celebrating their 20th year this year in 2025. I would say the main difference between the two organizations is kind of our approach, I guess I would argue. I mean, you know, obviously, if you speak to someone from AZA, they may give you a very different answer than what I'm about to give you. But really, you know, I think we share the same vision of the best quality of care and welfare for our animals. Again, safety, ethics. I think in those elements, our standards are very similar, and we are all trying to achieve the same messaging for our guests and visitors. I think the approach difference is that, you know, ZAA is a very kind of bottom-up type organization. We are very, very, very reliant on our members who put in countless volunteer hours in our committees to help help create education materials, to help with a welfare committee. We have an animal training committee. We have an education professional development committee. We just keep going on and on. We have a government affairs committee. I spend a lot of time on Capitol Hill, along with our colleague and consultant for government affairs. You know, we do a lot of things cross-organization. And I think what it does is, by having different organizations, I think what it does is offer our zoos and aquariums, and also our public, our visitors, an understanding and an opportunity to recognize the level of standards that our zoos and aquariums must achieve. We have a lot of facilities that are multi-accredited. So yes, there's AZA, yes, there's ZAA, but there are also other organizations that accredit and have a particular level of standards as well. So I think that what it does is it gives some credibility to the or to the industry as a whole, and it gives some assurance to our visitors and guests that, you know, our facilities are really top notch. So
now, the Columbus
answers the question.
Yeah. The Columbus Zoo and Aquarium is one of the largest facilities accredited by your organization, the Zoological Association of America. It earned that accreditation from the ZAA, that's you guys, in 2022. And if I'm reading it correctly, it's the only zoo in Ohio with that accreditation. Is that correct?
No, we actually have another zoo in Ohio that is accredited by ZAA, and it is in Port Clinton, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
I was
looking through the list. I must have missed that one. So, but tell me about the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium earning their accreditation in 2022. It's one of the largest facilities that you accredited. Is that right?
We do have what we would consider macro size, which would be something that the Columbus Zoo would fall into. We have a number of macro size zoos including San Antonio Zoo, Fort Worth Zoo, Pittsburgh Zoo and Aquarium. And I'm probably off the top of my head missing a few of those. But the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium, yes, actually, and when I was at Ohio State, worked very well with, you know, trying to, again, promote highest quality of animal care and welfare. Also in working with, at that time when I was at Ohio State, working with us in research. And I know that they continue to do that. I mean, I can't say enough about that particular facility. It's my hometown facility. I'm from, you know, Central Ohio. And so, very endearing to me. So.
Yeah. Now, it was well known that the Columbus Zoo lost its AZA, the other organization designation, after that investigation into misuse of funds, the reports of improper animal transfers. But mostly it was because of the report that came to light that a lot of zoo officials were misusing money. What made your association decide to accredit the zoo? Did your assessment take into account that mismanagement of money?
No, I think that's an extremely valid question. And, you know, you're asking about some of the differences between our organizations. You know, our organization focus is the animal. And then after the animal is the visitor and the visitor experience. So safety and so forth. So our standards are focused in that realm. And so we, even though, you know, it's a very unfortunate situation that happened, to say the least, I would say that, you know, as far as the zoo focusing on the animals' care and welfare, that was never in question. And that was, I don't believe, and again, I'm speaking out of my own understanding, I don't think that was ever in question, even for AZA, you know, but their standards include that kind of investigation into the business side. You know, we are focused, I would argue, much more on the animal. And so that was never in question, the ability for the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium to uphold high standards of animal welfare. And so that was why we were very comfortable and very happy that they sought ZAA accreditation and that we were able to accredit them. I mean, they still went through the interview, the application, they had to go through the inspections, they had to go through all of the appropriate channels, but they were able to do that because, again, that was really never a question.
Now, I'm sure you spend a lot of time, you said you spend a lot of time on Capitol Hill because you're advocating for different things, but I'm sure you also have spent a lot of time in zoos and aquariums. Do you have a favorite animal?
Oh, my goodness. I get asked that a lot. And, you know, my answer is always, I love all animals. Snakes are the only thing I have a little bit of a phobia about. I have to admit that I respect them. And I know there are a lot of people who love them. And I know they have a great place in our, you know, in the ecosystem. But I can't help. I'm a little nervous around them. My favorite animal of all times, though, is a giraffe. I really feel connected to giraffe. They're awkward and funny and tall. I'm a very tall person. They're just, you know, I just love them. Yeah.
Have you been to the Columbus Zoo recently? They have, I mean, it's been around for several years, but their Africa area with the giraffes is just excellent. And you get really up close. The giraffes are right there.
It's amazing. And that is, again, one of the things that I appreciate so much of, especially as an anthrozoologist, is thinking about that ability to get up close and personal with animals that you would maybe not ever have the opportunity to see, you know, outside of a zoo and aquarium, because not everybody has the means to travel and to do some other things. And so for me, having those experiences, watching kids just light up with fascination and curiosity and fun, right? Just really loving the moment and living in the moment and being able to share that moment with an amazing animal like a giraffe during a giraffe feed. You just can't beat that. It's just perfect.
And I guess I should have asked you at the very beginning, but you called yourself an anthrozoologist. Can you just explain those two words coming together?
Sure. It literally is the study of the human and non-human animal relationship. So the anthro and then zoology, right? So that connection, which there are some universities now that are actually offering degrees in that, you know, but again, it's a very interdisciplinary approach, as evident even by my, you know, academic background, you know, because there is no, how do I want to word this? You know, it's so multifaceted when you think about the relationship between animals, non-human animals and humans, you know, that those connections, whether that be, you know, your favorite animal that sits on your lap at home, or rather that be, again, an experience that you're having at a zoo, an aquarium, or anything in between, right? There's lots of different relationships that we have with animals, some of them even being terminal. If we think about, you know, animal agriculture as an example, you know, there's lots of different aspects. I would say the underpinning of all of it, I think, should be the welfare, not only the welfare of the animal, but the welfare of the people who are engaged with the animals. And when we think about wildlife conservation, there's lots of challenges when we think about the human animal aspect of that, everything from, you know, the loss of habitat to potential conflict between, you know, animals and humans. You know, we see this a lot. I spend a lot of time in Africa. We see this a lot in Africa, where, you know, we have crop raids and different things from different species that, you know, we're certainly interested in making sure that we have a place for those animals to exist, because they deserve it. So there's lots of challenges, right? But that's why I do what I do, and why I advocate for an industry that I think it is really at the root of trying to make those things work.
That was Kelly George, Executive Director of the Zoological Association of America and an alumnus of The Ohio State University. Kelly, thank you for your time today.
Thanks so much for the invitation. It was a true honor. Thank you.
And this has been Fascinating Ohio from All Sides, and this is 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich, and this is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. With aerial performances, hula hoop choreography, soulful vocals, and over 15 years in the music industry, you will never be bored at a Mojo Flow show. The Columbus neo-funk band recently released their newest album, What It Is, an album that follows the journey of one's way to the other side of hurt. Joining us is Amber Nicole, award-winning vocalist, actor and aerialist, and lead singer of Mojo Flow. Welcome to All Sides.
Thank you for having me.
So can you tell us the story of how and when Mojo Flow first formed?
So we all formed way back when we were in undergrad, and Walter, who was our saxophone player, and George, who was our guitar player, they were roommates in college, and so they started playing gigs together, and I ended up being the final piece of that puzzle musically, and we just have gone off from there.
Now, in terms of your music career, were you making music before Mojo Flow?
Yes. I've been singing since I was 4 years old. Mm-hmm. I started singing in church and did choir all throughout elementary school, middle school, high school, college. And I've always done musical theater since I was in high school. So I've been making music, and I have a very, very small tracked EP with my friend also singer-songwriter Nicole Burke from Massachusetts. Don't look it up. But it's very cute. Yeah, so, but I've been making music for my whole life.
And where did your love for funk and singing this type of music that Mojo Flow does, where did that come from?
Oh, man, just from the history of music, music that moves me. I think that every aspect of what I like about funk music is just the community, the literal movement together. You know, you end up clap. There's an element of call and response. There's elements of group sing and group movement. And so I think that all of those really, for me, connect through, you know, that's church music, that's musical theater, that where everybody busts out in song together, you know. Where else does everyone bust out in song together but at a concert, you know? So it's a really, really cool marriage of those two for me personally. So I think I love funk music because I love all of our music, and that's really, for me, the funk is the one. It's the basis of it all.
Has Columbus and the Columbus music scene, how do you feel? Are they supportive of your career as a musician? What do you think of the Columbus music scene?
Absolutely. 100%. We would not be where we are, without the support of the Columbus music scene. I think the Columbus music scene is very, very supportive. It's diverse. There's a lot of really good acts out there. There are a lot of really awesome established acts. There are folks that have been out here doing this for a while, like Hoodoo Soul Band. And there are some very new artists out here that are just really, really rocking it. And I'm really grateful to be a part of that scene and to have been on our musical journey so long that we are not the new kids anymore, but, you know, we're people that the new folks are asking for advice. And that's not a place that I necessarily thought that I would find myself. But not only do I find myself in a place where folks are saying, hey, what did you guys do? How did you all overcome this? But I'm being able to give really good insight without giving, you know, so quote unquote direction, you know, without telling you what to do. But I know that I'm qualified to do it. So that's really, really been cool. But yes, to answer that question, the community has been extremely supportive. And geez, whether it's through GCAC, Greater Columbus Arts Council, or the Ohio Arts Council, or even just our friends, you know, and our folks that have been with us since the very beginning. Joe Veers is our engineer on this album, and he has recorded us since we were very, very, very young.
Since we were music babies. Music
we
babies.
Babies. Yes.
How long have you been in Columbus? I know you moved up or you moved around a lot growing up, but how long have you called Columbus home?
I've called Columbus home for the past, I want to say 18 years. 18 years now. So a whole lifetime. My time in Columbus is now an adult. Legal adult.
Now, do you have a favorite venue to play in Columbus? Is that like, I don't want to ask you to pick your favorite child, but
yeah,
do you have
no,
a favorite?
Exactly. You know what? It all depends on for what. So, like I do the aerial stuff. I do aerial Lyra and the Silks, and the venue that has the capacity for that is the Columbus Commons. So I really love the Commons just because. One, shout out to the staff over at the Commons. They really accommodate us very nicely. They show up early for me because I rig up on the stage. So
yeah.
I really appreciate that. And that's my favorite for that capacity. I think any other favorites, I mean, it's really just where the love is. You know, that sounds so cliche, but it truly is. I mean, Rumba was amazing for our release show. Really do love Natalie's. There's some places that are no longer with us venue wise that were really, really awesome. But Columbus has a lot of really great stages.
Now, you mentioned that you are an aerialist. What made you decide, like, I'm a great singer, I'm going to keep singing, but I want to take it up into the air?
Pink.
Yeah?
Pink.
Oh, yes.
All day, every day, Pink. She has heavily influenced me ever since, like, 98. So I'm going to date myself. But her first single was Most Girls, and she, in her video, was doing push-ups. And not the push-ups that are modified. She was doing straight-up push-ups. And I was so, like, oh, I love just the strength there. You know, I just love being strong. And so
not just girl power.
Not just girl power.
Pink power, yeah.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Pink power. Yeah. And I love pink. And I just love her strength. I really love her strength. And she did an award show where she did the aerial hammock. Mm. And it was gorgeous. And I said, I want to do that. And so I kind of threw out a call on Facebook. And then Jess from The Amazing Giants hooked me up with Mikey from Movement Activities. And I started taking lessons. And the rest is Amber's aerial history.
Oh. Now, your first full-length album, What It Is, it was released May 17th. Can you tell me the inspiration behind this album?
The inspiration behind this album has been really just our entire lives, you know, our musical careers that we've been working towards. We've been working towards releasing a full-length album the entire time. You know, this is the goal of a group, is to continuously be releasing music. When we started, and not to sound like back in my day, but when we started, it was like release albums. As we have continued on in our music careers, Mojo Flow, the format is single release. So we have three EPs already, mm-hmm. and we have a holiday EP already. Mm-hmm. But we had not had a full length. An EP is just is the shorter length of things, but an LP is the long play. But we've always wanted to release a long play. And so it was about finding the right timing. But the inspiration behind all these tunes is really just life lived, mm-hmm. and what we were doing and what we were experiencing. We've got a song called Perpetual Conduit of Positivity. That was a song I wrote when I was feeling just smacked down by life and really actually sad and hopeless. But I didn't want it to sound like I was sad and hopeless. I wanted it to sound like I was looking at the other side of it. And throughout all of this, this album is really about what it's like to get to the other side of anything. You know, we all go through stuff, and everybody is shouldering their own burdens at any given time. And we wanted to send out something that would help everyone and us as well get through all that stuff. So that's what Keep Holding On came from. Keep Holding On came from a very, very dark place for me. But it literally is just keep holding on, just keep mm-hmm. holding on. And so, but then we have fun stuff too, like body language and funky and a jam. Cause it's not all about, you know, it's not all about sorrow, right? It's not all about just, oh my goodness, all the overwhelming things. There's also levity, and there's also a lot of joy to be found. And so
thus is life, the highs and lows.
Exactly.
Yeah. This album also has a special appearance from Bootsy Collins, mm-hmm. one of funk's most notorious bassists. How did you get in contact with Bootsy Collins? And what was it like to work with it? He's a fellow Ohioan.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Yes, exactly. He's from Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So we have an amazing friend named Jason with Bertha Hill Music, who Jason had already been working with Bootsy Collins during the pandemic through a company trying to inform seniors about how to vote and about getting their types of like whatever services they would need during the pandemic time. So Jason had an established relationship with Bootsy. And as he was working with us, he said, you know, I really love you guys' stuff, which is amazing. And he said, you know, I have a connection with Bootsy, and would you guys want to get him like on a track? And we're like,
yes,
right, exactly. Like, So he sent Bootsy one of our instrumental tracks, which ended up being the song That's What's Up. So we expected just to get a couple ad-libs back from Bootsy, right? Like just, yeah, baby, Bootsy, like all that stuff. Well, he sends us back a chorus and a verse, and we're just like, and I'm like, okay, well, I gotta write another verse, obviously, and it's been amazing. And so that's also been part of the story and journey of this album release, is that we needed to then, once we have this single with Bootsy Collins on it, like, you don't just put that out. You put some thoughtfulness behind the release. So,
and Here we have a clip of the song from a live performance in Columbus. So let's hear that song. I say, wave your hands and shake your butts up. So what song is that that we just heard?
That's What's Up.
That's What's Up. All right. So if you want to hear Bootsy Collins' part in it, you're going to have to get the album, though, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So when you perform it live, you don't have Bootsy following you around.
No, unfortunately not. No.
Yeah. This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides, and I'm Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News. And we're talking with Amber Nicole, award-winning vocalist, actor, and aerialist, and the lead singer of Mojo Flow. So, is it difficult to sing and do the aerial act that you do? Because I've seen you perform it at Columbus Commons, and it's spectacular. But you, and you're singing too. Is it just? Do you love it?
I love it. Mm-hmm. I am over the moon about it. And I think everyone should try aerial arts. You are stronger than you know, and you will not let yourself fall. Mm-hmm. And I think that has been a really great lesson that Ariel has taught me, but also to respect the art. You know, don't just jump up in a hoop. Don't just jump up in the silks. Don't just try to do a flip because, you know, you need to be properly prepared and trained for that. But how do I do it? I just breathe. Mm-hmm. And it's really, it's a great exercise for me, kind of a meditation, if you will, because there's so many things to think about. I know I can sing. I know the words. I know that stuff. And then adding the element of aerial is you've got to know where to put your feet. You've got to count how many times you're wrapping your wrist. So it kind of gives my brain something to think about to really, in essence, calm me down and just divert all of the different. Because I describe my brain during a performance as like just ticker tape. There's just, if you could see what's going on, and then it's just like, where did that come from? And you're like, I'm sorry. But that's something that's kind of helped quiet that a little bit and just give me something to really focus on. But also it's just fun. It's fun, like playing at a playground. Like I get to swing around and do flips, you know, and also be very careful because it makes everyone very nervous. But I love it.
And your group also, you create your own music, but you also do covers. And we have a cut of a cover you did of Get Lucky by Daft Punk. Do you like doing covers?
I do. I'm just listening. I'm like, okay, good. That pitch is right.
you're like, where did she get these cuts from?
Yes, right.
The internet is wild. Yeah.
Thank you. Right. And that's on consistency, you know, practice and train. But, it's fun stuff. You know, there's great songs out there. Mm-hmm. I became a singer and a musician singing other people's music all day, every day. And, but I also wanted to write my own stuff. But the first songs I sang were not the songs that I wrote. They were songs that someone else wrote. So I really love singing covers. I'm a huge Beyonce fan, huge Chaka Khan fan, Patti LaBelle, Tina Turner, and Yolanda Adams. She's in the gospel sector. I'm just very heavily influenced by a lot of Audra McDonald. I could go on about Audra McDonald. But Deborah Cox. I mean, there's just so many. Oh, and I'm very much a Barbra Streisand fan. So if all of those singers can sing other people's music, so can I. But I love a cover. There are so many phenomenal songwriters out there that it would be silly not to sing some of these amazing pieces that someone else has written.
Now we're down to only a couple minutes left, and I want to give you a chance. Summer's a busy time for Mojo Flow. Where can people come and listen to you?
Well, you can find all of our entire schedule at www.mojoflowmusic.com. If you follow us on all of our socials, Facebook, Instagram, at Mojo Flow Music, you'll find our entire schedule posted kind of as we go. But right now, our next performance will be at the Columbus Soul Festival. And that'll be in June.
Yes, it's okay. You don't have to have all dates memorized. That's okay. we can, yeah. Are you going to go on a, are you doing a tour? Or is it mostly, are you staying in Ohio with the album?
Right now we're staying, well, so we've already gone out of state with the album. So we were in Nashville and Louisville with, for our digital release of the album.
Okay.
So as a part of the Heady Wax Fiend Club meetup in Nashville. But then we also did a show in Louisville. So we've been out, but this summer we're going to be mainly based here in Columbus, or based here in Ohio, with a little bit of runouts, actually. So again, check out the website, because that's where that all is.
And there, I mean, you love the festival circuit, but then you're also in indoor venues with air conditioning, too.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I have my fans on stage. So yes, but exactly. We'll be everywhere. We'll be outdoors, indoors. Of course, we'll be at the Commons in July. We'll be at, like I said, Seabus Soul Festival, and a lot more.
That was Amber Nicole, award-winning vocalist, actor, an aerialist, and lead singer of Mojo Flow. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And this has been Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And I'm Amy Jurevich.